Jump shot. It's good. Zach Randolph does it again.
3-point game. They've got to go for three now. No choice. Conley for three. Ties it up.
First team all defense. First team all defense.
Here's Gasol from outside. Tony Allen. Shot clock at four. Randolph puts it up. Puts it in.
You are Locked On Grizzlies, your daily Memphis Grizzlies podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Welcome to the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. My name is Sean Coleman, and I will be filling in for regular host Mark King for the rest of this week. This is not my first rodeo when it comes to hosting this podcast, and Mark has allowed me the privilege to host in the past. I've also joined him for segments before, and so it's always a thrill, always very appreciative of the opportunity to come on and give y'all my perspective and thoughts on the Grizzlies, and so I'm glad to do it. Like I say, Mark will be out for the rest the week, but as always, if you want to follow him or the show, you can follow him on Twitter at King_producer, the show at Locked On Grizz. Me, myself, I know Mark, I've known him for a decade, but we really got to covering the Grizzlies together through Grizzly Bear Blues. I write over there for Grizzly Bear Blues and also do my own podcast, a 3&D podcast through the SBN Grizzlies podcast network. And you can follow my podcast on Twitter at 3&D Pod, as well as myself at StatsSAC. For today's show, we got plenty to talk about. Some news that came out yesterday regarding the February Rookies of the Month. We'll hit on that in the first segment. Then we'll talk about Jonas Valanciunas. Last March, after he was acquired in the Marc Gasol trade, Jonas established himself as a building block for the Grizzlies' future that the new front office, invested in. I'm going to talk about how I feel this March, Jonas's play, we're going to need another monumental March, and it could be even more important now than it was then. And then, obviously, we'll spend the last segment diving deep into the matchup tonight with the Nets, a matchup that becomes even more important, obviously, now, with the Pelicans losing to the Timberwolves and, other games going on with those teams chasing the Grizzlies for the eighth playoff spot. But shifting from the Grizzlies to, obviously, their young star, Ja Morant, yesterday it came out that the Rookies of the Month for February were Zion Williamson and Coby White. Now, Coby White, I felt, was a dark horse candidate for the Rookie of the Year award this year due to injury or whatever it may be, but I do feel like White has established himself as the best rookie currently in the Eastern Conference. Thus, he got the award. Zion, since he came back from his injury, it's pretty easy to say that he has established himself as the, best rookie in the West. I don't feel, is that's a stretch to say that, and I don't feel it's an insult to Ja. At this point, there's a reason why Zion was the most heralded rookie, it seems, since LeBron. I'm not saying he's a LeBron-type talent. There have been more talented players, obviously, that have come along since LeBron before Zion. But what I'm getting at is that there was a reason why he was so heralded from high school to Duke and to now. It's because of his talent. There was a reason why he was the first overall pick. When you look at the numbers, which we'll get into in a second, Zion is, at this point in time, a better NBA player than Ja Morant when it comes to, the numbers that he produces. However, that's simply the reason why it's the Rookie of the Month award is because it talks about the confines of that 1 month. There's a reason why Ja has won three straight before Zion became healthy again. Ja was the best rookie in the Western Conference and obviously the NBA in November, December, and January. And because of that, anyone who wants to take Zion's, Rookie of the Month win in February and try to enlarge it to make a case for him to win Rookie of the Year is misguided. There seems to be a more frequent conversation, and I get it. The media has to, it's Zion. They have to sit here and create some type of drama. But that's all this is to me. it's drama. At this point in time, it would take an injury that would keep Ja out for the rest of the year for Zion to really have the chance to be able to win the Rookie of the Year award. And there are two reasons why. The big reason number one is this, is that, like I said, Zion is currently a better player than Ja Morant. You know, the numbers, you know, show that. If you look at the per 36 numbers for Zion and Ja this season when they have played, Zion averages 30.1 points per 36 minutes, while Ja averages 21.3 points. Zion makes nearly 60% of his field goals, while Ja makes nearly 50% of his field goals. Now, because of their size difference and where they play, that's expected. But when it comes to their abilities to impact the game other than scoring, yes, Morant's assists, which he averages 8.4 assists per 36 minutes, his assist ability probably carry more significance than Zion's rebounding ability. But when you look at advanced statistics for the two and their overall impact on the game, right now their player efficiency rating, Ja Morant is at a very, very good 18.1 rating, while Zion Williamson is at 25.5. That makes him arguably one of the best players in the league. If you also look at their win shares per 48 minutes, meaning the amount of when you look at everything that they do and you put it towards a win, that's what that metric measures. Zion averages 0.156 win shares per 48 minutes, while Ja Morant averages 0.094. So what that means is that, yes, Zion, according to the numbers, significantly impacts the game more than Ja. Again, that's not an insult. It's just a compliment to the talent that Zion has. But the overall thing to remember is this, is that, yes, it's not a basically, this was expected. Everybody expected this year that Zion was going to be a better player than Ja Morant. But just because Zion has now proven that over 16 games, when teams have already played 60 to 63 games, just because Zion has proven that to be true in 16 of those games, that doesn't completely erase the 45 or so games that he was injured and what Ja did during that time frame. And that brings me to my second point. While Zion may be the better player right now, and he may be the better talent, Ja Morant has consistently proven that last year's draft class truly had two talents head and shoulders above the rest of the draft class. And Ja Morant has only gotten better. He continues to improve his offensive efficiency ratings, his ability to lead the team against better competition, his overall performance on the game. I mentioned in a writing that I wrote up, there have been seven times this year in which Ja Morant has had 20 points and 20 or more points and 10 or more assists. Seven times, including three times in his last 15 games. The Grizzlies, on the season, Ja Morant averages 17.5 points per game, 7 assists per game, and shoots at 49% from the field. When Ja Morant has those numbers in a game, when he scores basically 18 or more points, when he produces 7 or more assists, and when he shoots 50% or better from the field, the Grizzlies are 11-3. Since Zion has been back, the Pelicans are now 8-8. So the second point to make, beyond the fact that Zion has only been impacting this season for a fourth of it, is that not only has Ja continued to get better, but overall you can make the case that he has been more impactful and more valuable when it comes to the Grizzlies. There were many who expected the Pelicans to be in playoff contention if Zion was healthy the whole year. There were not many who expected the Grizzlies to be there. So the fact that the Grizzlies have overachieved with Ja playing to the level that he has, and that they play their best basketball when Ja is playing his best basketball, I think that that plays a part in this. And I think that that adds extra cushion there to show that Ja truly is the Rookie of the Year over Zion. It's great getting to see Zion perform. It's amazing every time he takes the court. But the same can be said about Ja Morant. And because Ja Morant has been doing it the entire year, I don't think there's any question that he is the true Rookie of the Year, and at the end of the day, there should be no debate about it. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll dive deep into the recent success of Jonas Valanciunas, and I'll explain why that's going to be very important to continue as the Grizzlies head into March. We'll be right back with you here on the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. Welcome back to the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. And again, my name is Sean Coleman, filling in for regular host Mark King for the rest of this week. And in the first segment, you know, we talked about, despite Zion Williamson winning the February Rookie of the Month, there's plenty of depth to the argument that Ja Morant definitely is and will remain, you know, barring a catastrophic injury, the clear Rookie of the Year winner, in my opinion. But one thing that, you know, I mentioned was that, you know, after a few questionable games back from the All-Star break, Ja has really, you know, picked up his efforts, especially, you know, against Sacramento and the Lakers. While the Grizzlies only won one game, it was Ja who truly made the difference to keep them in the game against Sacramento and, you know, win decisively against the Lakers. But another player who is starting to really find his groove is Jonas Valanciunas, and it's pretty eye-opening that it's happening around the same time this year in which he started to really endear himself and, you know, work his way into the Grizzlies' future plans last year. Of course, Jonas Valanciunas was acquired at the 2019 trade deadline in the Marc Gasol trade. At the time he was acquired, you know, there really wasn't, you know, an understanding of what was there with the Grizzlies and Jonas. Jonas was coming back from a, you know, injury that had kept him out for a few months. Coming back, you know, to where obviously stock was a little bit down. You know, a team that had clear playoff aspirations, despite Jonas being a good player, preferred a player who was probably on the decline versus Jonas, who may be entering his prime. And so, you know, overall, there was definitely more questions about Jonas's future than probably he or most people in the NBA thought there would be, you know, back earlier in the 2018-2019 season. But once March hit for a Grizzlies team that, you know, definitely was on its way to the lottery, the inclusion of Jonas into the equation allowed for the Grizzlies to commit to playing offense at a level that they had not had before. And the end result was a month of offense that truly was one of the best offensive months in the history of the franchise. Now, obviously, Mike Conley playing, you know, at the level he was certainly helped out. But, you know, just looking at Jonas's track record, especially as the month wound down, you know, he had a six-game stretch in which he scored 33-15, 33 points, 15 rebounds, 23 points and 24 rebounds, 20 points and 14 rebounds, 18 points and 14 rebounds, 27 points and 13 rebounds, and 34 points and 20 rebounds. Just a six-game dominant stretch in which Jonas was truly the reason why the Grizzlies were able to stay in and win some of those games. So, you know, obviously, a big reason despite his style of play was, you know, it wasn't just Jonas playing that way. It was such a contrast from what people had, you know, come being used to with Mark. You know, they definitely, you know, Mark's style of play probably was not valued as highly as it should have been. Because he was so natural at it, it didn't seem like there was a lot of effort that was involved. Whereas a player like Zach Randolph, who many Memphis fans will say Jonas reminds them of, Zach Randolph's results were an effort of pure all-out play, and that's the way that Jonas plays. And he plays with emotion and a chip on his shoulder, just like Zach Randolph did. So I think that had a part to do with it. I think that it was the intangible of Jonas Valanciunas through his style of play reminded many of the beloved Zach Randolph, and it makes perfect sense, and it is great to talk about now, coming off last week in which, you know, this past weekend in which Zach, you know, made his return to Memphis and Jonas put on a rebounding display that hadn't been seen since Zach Randolph. You know, I know there was the clip from Grizzly Bear Blues contributor and associate editor Parker Fleming. You know, he interviewed Jonas about it, and Jonas talked about modeling his game after Zach. So I bring all this up to say that, you know, we're now a year into the future of Jonas really establishing himself into the Grizzlies' plans. And, you know, it's not just, you know, the stats and his efforts, you know, on the court. It's the type of person that he is, and it's the intangibles. And that is why I think that, you know, now, coming into this March, Jonas's performance, Jonas's play is important to the Grizzlies. And it's going to be more important due to the fact that the Grizzlies are now in the playoffs. Now, don't get me wrong. Over the summer, I was one of those people who I think, like Mark, you know, we were kind of hesitant to really want to include Jonas is a truly big part of the Grizzlies' future. You know, there's just, you know, enough data out there that shows that a player of Jonas's skill set, they are becoming less and less valuable, you know, despite their offensive gains, the, you know, liability that they are on defense and the fact that during the playoffs, his centers with his style of play just become less valuable. You know, it's hard to really commit a lot of money to them if your goal is to make the playoffs, obviously. But in the end, I think Jonas, while he has had his struggles, you know, it's obvious that, you know, defenses, you know, especially the, you know, the better teams that run the smaller lineups and they space and they operate well away from the basket, you know, Jonas is probably going to be exposed. But in general, Jonas has certainly filled his role well with the Grizzlies, and as he has become healthier this year, he has definitely stepped into that role, not only as the main rebounder and inside presence, but also as the enforcer, that guy who can, for the Grizzlies, control the emotion in the game. You know, we saw it the other night when the Harry Giles situation. Though the Kings won, Jonas was right there. He's going to back up his teammates. We saw it in New York when one of the Morris twins pushed Ja Morant. Jonas was right there. Jonas was right in the face of Giles that game as well. And the thing about it is it's that his scoring has not had to be there this year. Due to Taylor Jenkins's, you know, bringing in a competent offensive scheme and the Grizzlies' ability to execute much more this year than they have over the past few years, you know, the system itself has allowed for the Grizzlies to score more often, where Jonas hasn't had to do it night in and night out. But the one thing that's still there is rebounding. And that is certainly something that, you know, especially over the past month, that has helped the Grizzlies, you know, a lot. Really, really allowed for them to be able to get through the loss of Brandon Clark and Jaren Jackson Jr. And as they have played more competitive teams, those rebounds, especially the defensive rebounds that limit the other team's extra possessions, those are huge. And the thing about it is with Jonas, he does it with the swagger. Like when Jonas corrals it, I've seen very few other players who, when they get a rebound, it's just clear it's theirs and they don't get challenged. Jonas does it with the swagger, and I think that instills a confidence in the rest of the Grizzlies roster and a confidence, you know, in the coaching staff and things such as that, to where, okay, the ball's ours now. Not only have we kept the other team from having an opportunity, we now are confident in our opportunity to score. So Jonas has that ability not only to, you know, impact through the box score, but also to impact through through the intangibles, through the emotional, you know, pull of, you know, his passion for the game and the effort that he gives. But a key stat that I think is important to, you know, to continue to watch out for, as I was, you know, saying, you know, last March, there were six games there in which Jonas just went off. You know, the fewest rebounds he got, you know, in that stretch was 13, and there were a couple of times where he got 20. Well, Jonas now is coming off a month in February where in 11 games, he averaged 14 rebounds a game. And before the month of February, when Jonas had grabbed 13 or more rebounds in the game, the Grizzlies were 8 and 11. Excuse me, let me take this back. They were 8 and 10 in games in which Jonas had grabbed 13 or more rebounds. Over the past calendar year, when Jonas Valanciunas grabbed 13 or more rebounds in the game, the Grizzlies had been 8 and 10. Well, over the past month, Jonas has grabbed 13 or more rebounds 7 times. The Grizzlies are 6 and 1. Now, I can't really pinpoint as to what has changed other than the Grizzlies playing better competition have really been able to minimize those second chance opportunities, perhaps, and that has allowed for them to be able to execute on offense. But it really does show through that Jonas has picked up his rebounding game when he clearly is the real, true, only rebounding threat out there. And so that's the reason why I think Jonas, despite his limitations and despite his liabilities, his play in the month of March, during this stretch of games in which we face better competition, and in which obviously we're in the playoff push this year versus not being in it last year, I think a monumental month of March for Jonas in terms of rebounding and contributing and scoring when he can, I think it carries more importance this year because if the Grizzlies know that they have the ability to grab those defensive rebounds and they have the ability to get out on a run, that's when they're playing their best basketball while also minimizing the weakness of other teams being able to get those second chance opportunities. So while yes, other players are probably going to be more important for the Grizzlies, and yes, you know, at the end of the day, the net value of Jonas may surprise you how low it is due to the fact that, you know, he can be a liability on defense. Jonas's ability to rebound, to grab those defensive rebounds, and also to be that enforcer, to grab that momentum and really put it in the Grizzlies' favor, I think that's going to pay huge dividends, especially during this month where I think, you know, in a game where the Grizzlies are playing a team that they probably should not beat, Jonas could be the difference maker to allow for them to snatch a couple of upsets to help their cause towards the playoffs. So, you know, again, while Jonas is definitely the player many of us thought he would be, you know, his importance to this team is not just about his on-the-court production. It's the emotion, the passion that he plays the game with, the support that he shows his teammates. But at the end of the day, on the court, Jonas Valanciunas rebounding could play a big part in the stretch run for the Grizzlies to eventually, you know, get their desired outcome of making the playoffs. We're going to take another break real quickly, but we'll be right back to look at this game tonight against the Brooklyn Nets. Welcome back to the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. And for the third segment tonight, we're going to look at, obviously, the Grizzlies matchup tonight against the Brooklyn Nets. Now, you know, obviously, the Brooklyn Nets and Memphis Grizzlies, when you think of rivalries or when you think of matchups that, you know, carry significance, you know, does it really, you know, stand out to you, the Nets and the Grizzlies? Probably not. But, you know, I think for Grizzlies fans, when you really think about it over the past couple of years, this matchup should. And one of the reasons why that is in terms of our most attractive talents, you know, Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson Jr. If you think about it, in the 2018-2019 season, Jaren Jackson Jr.'s true breakout game, the true game where he established, you know, he showed people his, you know, when his ability is at its peak, just how impactful he could be on a game. It was in Brooklyn against the Nets, in which he helped the Grizzlies win in overtime, you know, last year. The same exact thing happened with Ja Morant earlier this year in the third game of the season. You know, entering the fourth quarter down 97-92, you know, Ja just put the team on his back, scored 17 points in the fourth quarter, led to a tie game. He blocked Kyrie Irving's game-winning attempt, and then in overtime, despite just scoring 2 points, Ja made the pass to Jay Crowder. You know, and of course Crowder hit the three to win the game. But that's why I think, you know, when you really think about the Grizzlies, you know, opponents over the past few years, the Nets should stand out because the two best talents for the future on the Grizzlies, they had their first true iconic performance against the Nets, you know, Jaren last year and Ja this year. The other big thing about tonight's game is that with the Grizzlies' schedule becoming harder and harder as we go through March, and with them having all-important games against the Timberwolves and the Spurs and the Pelicans, you know, coming up over the next few weeks, the game tonight is a big one for the Grizzlies. It is a game that, you know, their chances to win are likely higher tonight than it will be for most of the other games over the rest of the month. You know, that includes Dallas on Friday night. So the Grizzlies need to be focused. They don't need to look past this game. They certainly need to be focused because the Nets are right there with the Grizzlies. The Nets are in their own race for the eighth playoff spot in the East. So they have plenty to play for, despite the fact that they're now going to be without Kyrie Irving for the rest of the year. But the thing about the Nets is that's not necessarily that big of a deal because you now just basically have the same group of guys that before Kyrie and before Kevin Durant signed with them. You know, they were a surprise playoff contender for a few years. They definitely have risen to the occasion when called on. So it's going to be a tough matchup tonight. Pretty equal matchup in terms of talent. But the Grizzlies have got to be on top of their game. And not only will they have to be on top of their game, you know, from the get-go, they'll have to remain on the top of their game, you know, as it unfolds. And a big thing that I think it's going to come down to is defense. You know, the Nets are 2-4 since they lost Kyrie, and now they have allowed 120 points, you know, per game over that stretch. The thing about the Grizzlies is that while their defense before the All-Star break was top five in the league, you know, like in the 3 to 4 weeks before the All-Star break, while it has took a step back in their five-game skid after the All-Star break, the Grizzlies now have gone two straight games in which they've held their opponents, including the Lakers and the Hawks with Trae Young, to under 90 points a game. So I think the Grizzlies are really going to have to focus defensively on playing together and playing as a unit. And here are a couple of interesting, you know, reasons why I think that's the case. Obviously, with Jaren Jackson Jr. and Brandon Clark out, you know, the Grizzlies are going to be at a size disadvantage. You know, in the last segment, I talked about the importance of Jonas Valanciunas' rebounding. Well, tonight, it's definitely going to have to be on display. Both the Grizzlies and the Nets are amongst the best in the league when it comes to rebounding. The Grizzlies are eighth in total rebounding, while the Nets are second. And the thing about it is that when it comes to that fact about the Nets and that fact about the Grizzlies, part of it is because of the quantity of the style of play for both these teams, but it also is the quality of the Nets' size. And I think that that's going to be something that could put Memphis at a disadvantage tonight and what they're going to have to watch out for. You know, on the season, you know, the Nets average nearly 48 rebounds per game, and they average about 11 offensive rebounds per game. When the Nets get 10 offensive rebounds and at least 50 total rebounds, they are 11-7. When the Grizzlies get at least 40 defensive rebounds, they are 13-4. So what this tells you is that if the Grizzlies can establish their box outs, if they can communicate, if they can keep the Nets off of the offensive boards, their chances of winning become significantly different. However, if the Nets are able to find their way to some loose balls and to some rebounds and then have good high percentage shots, you know, in the end, that could be the difference in the game. You know, the Grizzlies just are not going to have a lot of margin for error, especially, you know, with two of their better players out. So they're going to have to focus on the post, make sure that every man spots up on someone when the shot goes up so that they can limit second chance scoring opportunities. The other big thing for the Grizzlies, obviously, is also, you know, they can't pay too much attention to the post. They've got to focus on the perimeter. The Nets are currently they are currently ninth in the NBA in three-pointers per game, and that's because they average the fifth highest amount of threes per game, you know, in the league. They're only 25th in terms of their ability to make their threes, but because they try so many each game, they still are one of the most productive teams from beyond the arc. And the thing about it is that the Grizzlies for a long time have struggled with the ability to guard the perimeter, but over the past month, they have certainly been better. But I think that that's the thing that it's going to come down to. Besides second chance, limiting the second chance points of the Nets, I think for the Grizzlies, it's also going to be contesting as many shots as possible from three. Because the thing about it is that the Nets average 12.9 made threes per game, while the Grizzlies allow 12.8 threes per game. When the Grizzlies allow 13 or more threes, they are 11-20. So if the Nets just simply perform like they have all season, the Grizzlies may be already behind the eight ball, and it's going to be hard for them to be able to find a way to come back without their own three-point shooting capabilities. If this gets into a three-point shooting contest, the Grizzlies are at a disadvantage, simply because not only do they not have the three-point shooters, but on long rebounds, they lack size. It's going to be hard to be able to get second-chance points. So the thing about it tonight for the Grizzlies is that they've got to be committed on defense. They also have to commit to controlling the possession count. The Grizzlies need to likely have more possessions, maybe double-digit higher number of possessions. Their possession margin needs to be in the double digits more than likely through creating more turnovers, gaining more rebounds, whatever it may be. If the Grizzlies can play effective on defense and efficient on offense, I think that they have a good chance to win this game, especially with the Nets' defense being at the level it has been over the past week or so. In the end, I do think that the Grizzlies can pull off this victory, but it's going to be have to be a concentrated effort, and it's going to have to be because of our team playing good defense. At the end of the day, no matter what you think about a team without their stars, a lot of times that team may become better due to them pulling together, and I think the Nets do have that capability. So as far as tonight goes, the big thing about it is the Grizzlies are just going to have to keep playing effective defense, and then if they can, they should have the ability to, you know, produce enough offense to win the game. I do feel the Grizzlies will win. I feel they'll feel they will take care of business. And at this point, I'm not calling it a must win, but it really will continue to help their cause. Anytime the Grizzlies play against a team with a losing record or with a team that they probably have a 50-50 chance of winning, you know, the game, they need to win as many of those games as possible because, again, as the schedule gets harder, the more wins and the more depth that you have to work with, typically it gives you more confidence to pull off some upsets, you know, during the harder part of the schedule. So for tonight's game, Grizzlies need to focus, obviously, on defense, stay efficient on offense, and while they're at it, also hopefully allow for themselves to have another game, you know, in which they can pull ahead and maintain the lead pretty comfortably. Thank you so much for joining us on this edition of the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. Again, my name is Sean Coleman. If you are a sponsor and you would like to talk with Mark about having your work or whatever it may be promoted on the show, please reach out to him again at King_producer on Twitter. And please follow the Locked On Grizzlies podcast at Locked On Grizz. Again, my name is Sean Coleman. Hope you all have a great rest of your day. Go Grizzlies tonight. We'll be back with you tomorrow to recap the game and also talk about some other hot topics in regards to the Grizzlies. Thank you so much for listening to us here on the Locked On Grizzlies podcast.